dem Sterben seine Blume, einen goldenen Becher gab.
In Greek mythology, the War of the Titans was a 10-year series of battles which were fought between two camps of deities long before the existence of mankind, the Titans of Atlantis and the Olympians, who had come to reign on Mount Olympus. This Titanomachia is also known as the Battle of the Titans, Battle of Gods, or just the Titan War, and was fought to decide who would become the rulers.
Und als kam zu sterben, seine Städte im Reich.
Greeks of the classical age knew of several poems about the war between the gods and many of the Titans. The dominant one, and the one that survived, is the Theogony attributed to Hesiod. The stage for this important battle was set after the youngest Titan, Cronos, overthrew his own father, Uranus, with the help of his mother, Gaia. Cronos took his father's throne after dispatching him, then secured his power by re-imprisoning his siblings. After freeing his siblings, Zeus led them in rebellion against the Titans. Zeus then waged war against his father with his brothers and sisters as allies. He also released the Cyclops from the earth, where they had been imprisoned by Cronos, and the Cyclops forged for Zeus his iconic thunder and lightning. Fighting on the other side, allied with Cronos, were the other Titans, with the important exception of Prometheus, who allied with Zeus. Atlas was an important leader on the side of Cronos. The war lasted 10 years, but eventually Zeus and the other Olympians won. And the Titans were imprisoned in Tartarus. In the Iliad, Zeus asserts that Tartarus is, and I quote, as far beneath Hades as heaven is above earth. While according to Greek mythology, the realm of Hades is the place of the dead, Tartarus also has a number of inhabitants. Atlas was given the special punishment of holding up the sky.
We think of Atlantis as an island, probably somewhere in the Atlantic, and probably about in the location of the present Azores Islands. But actually, Atlantis was a diffusion. To have a map of Atlantis as it was in the time of its glory, you would have to have a map of the entire planet, because it was a distribution. Continents rose and fell, islands came up and went down, great land shifts occurred. Plato refers to the mysterious empire as Atlantis. He probably received this name, or secured it, from Solon, who in turn had received it from the priests of the Egyptian temple at Sais. Now, the word Atlantis, or its root, is not Egyptian, and it is not Greek. No one seems to be able to trace the origin of the name. It appears on two very important phases of ancient mythology, Atlantis and Atlas. And the root is A-T-L, Atal. Now, if we look to find a language in which that word or that root is permissible or was used, we find we'd have to come to the Western Hemisphere, because Atal was one of the month names of the Mayas. It also has more than just a name significance. Its glyph or its symbol is a deluge. This seems then to give us the real basis of our word. According to Plato, at a remote time, the gods of High Olympus distributed the world to their various sub-deities, and to Poseidon was given the lands of the sea, the great oceans, the islands, the archipelagos. And Poseidon created his kingdom in the oceans. These islands came together to form a league. And this league, in turn, created a kind of empire. And in the course of ages, the princes of the islands of the Atlantides became very proud. They decided that they would conquer the world. So in order to achieve this great end, they decided to send expeditions of conquest over all the other parts of the then Atlantean distribution. Now this distribution at that time consisted, much as it does today, of countries of various degrees of development. It was not an uninhabited world. The Atlanteans were not the only people. But these other people were comparatively primitive. They were like the natives of Africa or the natives of some Polynesian area, or perhaps the natives of some distant islands of the South Pacific. They were primitive people, but they existed. And the Atlantean merchants went to them, traded with them, and bartered with them. Plato states definitely that Atlantis had a great mercantile, that it traveled to all parts of the world, that it even visited Europe and as far south as South America. These princes decided, near the end of their time, to invade what is now Europe. They decided to invade in the areas of the Mediterranean, North Africa, and the Near East. So they sent great fleets to conquer these countries. In the meantime, the deities, particularly Poseidon, realizing what was occurring, gave warnings and sent prophets and told these people they were destroying themselves, but they were proud and they gave no mind or no thought to consequence. And finally, they rebelled against the gods, and the gods reacted accordingly. In a single night, the great center of Atlantean culture, the island of Posidonis, the last surviving fragment of an ancient order of life, disappeared under the ocean, and according to the Maya calendar, carried with it to death 60 million human beings.
Es ging ihm nichts darüber.
The people of Chaldea and Babylonia were very primitive. They had no laws to live by and no governments except tribal communes. And in the midst of all this time, while they were living along the shores of the sea, one day something strange happened. A being came out of the sea. This being, whom they called Oannes, had the body of a fish and the head of a human being. And this man who came out of the sea had scales. Now, scales could very well represent armor. He carried symbols with him. And he was a good man. And he came to these people. And he taught them. He gave them a written language. He gave them the knowledge of agriculture. He taught them astronomy and the mystery of the stars. He helped them to build a permanent government. Introduced them into the mysteries of architecture and the building of cities. And he also taught them the mysteries of heaven and the ways of the gods and taught them to live in obedience. And he told them that in due time he would return. And then he went back to the sea, promising to come back one of these days, sometime in the future. And he walked out into the sea and disappeared. Now, this seems to me to be a veiled story, could be a veiled story, of an Atlantean traveler, a missionary perhaps, who came to these people. This one who came out of the sea He dressed in armor. Probably came on a ship, which came over the horizon and was regarded as evidence that he came out of the sea. The most important thing, I think, in this legend is that he promised to return. So they waited. And they kept his laws and they kept his rules for years. But he never came back. These stories are interesting. There's nothing you can do but remember these strange stories. The same story exists in China. In China, the world's reformation, the restoration of humanity, was the result of a mysterious being who came out of a fish's mouth and, rising out of the sea, taught them the secrets of life. In India, Vishnu, in his first incarnation, is born from the fish's mouth. Everywhere, the sea was the source of instruction. Something came from the sea. We can't dogmatize what it is, but it is interesting that at a remote period, certainly 8 or 10,000 years ago, if not more, doctrines and concepts and beliefs reached all parts of the world and are still reserved and preserved in all the mythologies, legends, and allegories of ancient peoples, recognized as the ultimate source of civilization. Now, if these were missionaries, travelers, philanthropists from the Atlantean Empire, they might have wished to come back. They might have said that they would, or that others would follow. And then came the deluge. The center of the great wheel was destroyed. No one could come back. Little by little, these peoples in different areas modified their beliefs. Interracial minglings brought about complications of stories concerning the descent of knowledge. I think if we follow all of the traditions that exist, we would summarize the highest terminal aspect of Atlantean culture as a very high culture, with scientific knowledge, with good map making, with many types of industry, arts, and sciences, accredited as having the first to domesticate the horse, with hospitals and clinics, and with various types of locomotion. And according to the old stories, the Atlanteans had the secret of flying through the air. We can doubt all these things. We don't know for certain. But we do know that there was on this planet at least 50,000 years ago, that there was a great civilization. One of the Hindu scriptures says, referring to the earth, "The Great Mother has shaken many civilizations from her back." And maybe Atlantis was one of them. Maybe Lemuria was another. Perhaps Hyperborea was another. But in any event, far back, there were forms of life and culture very different from what we have today. If in a more ancient time, most of the planet consisted of comparatively primitive peoples, most people living in other parts of the planet would have no knowledge of it. Or if they had a knowledge, it would only be a legend. And perhaps the legend is responsible for another series of interesting beliefs. The World Mountain, Olympus, Asgard of the Nordic peoples, the whole series of the demigods, the demigods who walked with men, the individuals who had apparently supreme power, in which a higher cultured civilization moved in on a primitive one and was mistaken for gods until they proved that instead of being gods, they were ravishers of the earth. So in that type of thinking, we might also find a source for much of our religious thinking. These mysterious priests of the serpent of the city of the sun, these priests were undoubtedly wise in the mysteries of life. The ancient rites and mysteries of the Greeks and Romans and Egyptians the secret and esoteric teachings that have descended to us from unknown antiquity may very well have originated among the esotericists of Atlantis. There also seems to be quite a little evidence to the effect that when the great decision was made and the gods decreed that the Atlanteans had destroyed themselves and must be removed from the earth, that prophets arose among them in those last days before the end. And these prophets warned them, warned the people, and these prophets led certain groups of the Atlanteans away from Atlantis and into what is now Europe and the Near East. These peoples survived. As this migration occurred at least 12 to 15,000 years ago, we have some suspicion that many of the civilizations of the Near East, and perhaps even of the Far East, originated among these transplanted peoples who had gone away from the cause of death. It is stated in the Atlantic story that a great number of the gods of Egypt were, refugees from Atlantis. That the gods of the Egyptians were Atlantean deities who originally, perhaps, actually and physically lived as leaders of their peoples. In any event, the idea that the world was populated in one sense by refugees is not unreasonable. And many of them settled and mingled with the peoples of these areas to form some of these wonderful and mysterious civilizations which we have no real explanation for. We have very little explanation for how racial differentiation in recent times came about. Various anthropologists, so forth, have charts showing what happened. But as is the case in most of science, no one seems to know how it happened or why it happened. Is it true that a civilization existed long ago which knew what we do not know today? Is there something lost in our way of life because it disappeared under the waters of the Atlantic so far back in our story? Is it true that there were giants upon the earth in those days that had skills and abilities which they had derived from the studies of esoteric matters? Did black magic originate in Atlantis? It probably did, according to the Platonic discussion, because it was in Atlantis that for the first time man disobeyed the gods. And from disobedience fell the angel. In the last few years, there's been a great deal of emphasis upon extraterrestrials visiting our planet.
These Greek stories of the Titan War fall into a class of similar myths throughout Europe and the Near East, where one generation of a race or a group of gods, by and large, opposes the dominant one, often the parent civilization. Sometimes the elder gods are supplanted, sometimes the rebel gods lose and are either cast out of power entirely or incorporated into the existing pantheon. The secret occult societies that put Hitler into power diligently researched the ancient Tibetan, Indian, and Greek historic texts concerning prehistory, documenting the cultural, linguistic, and genetic similarities of these legends with the Nordic legends of blonde-haired, blue-eyed, Aryan gods. The occult secret societies that influenced the Nazi ideology came to their conclusion that the Earth undergoes periodic global cataclysms and the vast portions of the inner Earth is hollow and has been inhabited within for many millennia by another unknown branch of humanity. Ultima Thule is the name of the capital city of the mythical continent of Hyperborea, which was historically older than Atlantis. According to legend, the Hyperboreans were the most highly technologically and socially advanced society that existed in the pre-flood age, having created large tunnels which were said to penetrate through the Earth's crust to permanently settle civilization under the Himalayas. According to some myths, they named their new kingdom Agartha, and its capital city was Shambhala, which was the mythical paradise below the Earth's surface. The Nazis believed that the Nordic-looking gods who came from the stars were a genetically distinct race from another world, who had Rh-negative blood type and did not evolve from the hominids in Africa.
One of the reasons the Germans were so focused on the master race, because some of these groups that were coming out from underground and presenting themselves to them as their forefathers were a lot of times blonde hair, blue-eyed, and very Caucasian, master race-looking. The master race that was depicted by these groups during that late World War I, World War II era, they had very much that look about them.
The Nazis believed that they descended from Atlantean white supermen, and they believed that they'd lost their powers. The Nazis believed that they'd evolved through dark races mixing with their Atlantean blood. So they were attempting to purify themselves again to get back to the original state, the Nazi God-man.
In the distant past, the Atlanteans, the fourth root race of creation, had split into pure and bestial species. After many thousands of years, the pure race, the Aryan God-men of the fifth root race, had interbred with the beasts. The result was catastrophic decline and the near loss of the Aryan psychic powers.
In the eyes of many Nazis, Atlantis was the mythical homeland of the Aryan race. They thought that they would be tall, blonde-haired, blue-eyed.
The Aryans, a mythical and superior race, had invented everything of value in human history. From agriculture to architecture, the creation of theater, and fine art. This great Aryan culture came to life thousands of years ago, an island continent they believed existed in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. To find a trace of these ancestors, the Nazis trained their sights on the Canary Islands off the coast of Africa.
They saw this as being sort of the southern edge of this sort of mythical Atlantean continent. And they also were really kind of focused on accounts of mummies that had been found on the Canary Islands that had blonde hair.
The mummies had been examined. They claimed the blonde-haired mummies were proof that Atlanteans had once lived on the Canary Islands. And most importantly, they were Aryans. Now that they had proof of an Atlantean fatherland, the Nazi scientists concocted an even more bizarre theory to explain its destruction and disappearance. It was called the World Ice Theory. As the ice melted, these massive glaciers receded. Atlantis was simply scrubbed away, buried under the water. But what happened to the people?
The inhabitants of Atlantis, according to this theory, then fled to various areas that were thought to be safe refuges. They would flee to Tibet, they would flee to the Bolivian Andes.
An ancient occult legend that tells the story of a continent somewhere in the North Atlantic There lived a race of super beings who had fallen from grace through evil and vice. The land was called Atlantis. A great flood wiped these beings off the face of the earth. But before they could all be destroyed, certain priests escaped by boat. These escaped priests, believed by mystics, to be the original race of Aryan godmen, who were said to be the ancestors of all Indian and European people, descended from the super beings of Atlantis, and that they had lost their powers by mating with mere mortals. The Nordic race did not evolve, but came directly down from heaven to settle on the Atlantic continent. Ancient immigrants from Atlantis had founded a great civilization
in the high Himalayas. Here, survivors of the last cosmic catastrophe took shelter. This is the true cradle of the Aryan race.
In 1871, British novelist Edward Bulwer Lytton described a race that lived underground and sustained themselves with the Vril Force, or bioelectromagnetic energy. They may have been the descendants of the Hyperboreans, inhabitants of Thule. The Hyperboreans were said to have harnessed the natural power of Vril to manipulate matter and energy, enabling them to extended lifespans and existing in what some might regard as a godlike existence.
Die Augen täten ihm sehen, trank nie einen Tropfen.
My name is Robert Sepper. I'm an independent anthropologist. I would like to thank you for listening and sharing if you enjoyed the video. Of course, giving a thumbs up will help me out, as will a thoughtful comment, which I do read, even though I'm unfortunately not able to reply like I would like to. I appreciate the donations some of you have made to Atlantean Gardens, the nonprofit organization that publishes my books. Even if you cannot make a donation, I'm honored to be able to share my research with you, and I'm very grateful for the open minds and the encouragement I get out there to continue making these videos. So please leave a request in the comment section if you have one. Thanks again. Don't forget to subscribe if you haven't already, and I will see you next time.